12 in the Mumonkan, the Umenkwang, Zuigan calls his master. Zuigan Gen Osho called to himself every day, "Master," and answered, "Yes, sir." Then he would say, "Be wide awake," and then he would answer, "Yes, sir." Henceforward, never be deceived by others. No, I won't. Mumon's comment: old Zuigan buys himself and sells himself. He takes out a lot of God masks and devil masks and puts them on and plays with them. What for, eh? One calls and the other answers. One wide awake, the other saying he will never be deceived. If you stick to any of them, you will be a failure. If you imitate Zuigan, you will play the fox. Mumon's verse, clinging to the deluded way of consciousness, students of the Dharma do not realize truth. The seed of birth and death through endless eons, the fool calls it the true original self. This is a very simple koan, one of my favorite koans, about a monk named Zuigan. And Zuigan gets up in the morning and he does his zazen, you know. And basically he has a conversation with himself, with his true self. Zuigan Osho called to himself, his true self, every day and said, "Master," and answered. This, you can picture him sitting in a room, right? Zuigan Osho called to himself every day. He sits in his room, "Master, Master." And then he says, "Yes, sir." He would say, "Be wide awake." And he would answer, "Yes, sir." Henceforward, never be deceived by others. "No, I won't." "Oh, don't worry, don't worry. No problem." This is, I think, a wonderful koan. You know, in daily life, all of us have frustrations, difficulties, and challenges. And one of the beautiful things is that we can do zazen. You know, I don't know if you've had this experience, but when I first came to Rutgers, I found that by the end of the week, at the beginning of the week, very big problems wouldn't bother me too much. But by the end of the week, I found really tiny problems bothered me a lot. When I first came to this job at Rutgers, I have an administrative job in addition to teaching. And so there's always problems, always something coming across my desk. And the problems are endless, you know. And they can range from anything from, school starts and the books for a certain course are not in the bookstore. This is very common. If you know the university bookstore, you know how common this is. And then can be something like a... This really happened just last year. We hired a teacher. He had good credentials. And in the middle of the semester, he disappeared. Literally disappeared. Students called me on the phone and said, "Where's our teacher?" So I actually called his house. No answer. He was also working at Middlesex County College. So I called Middlesex, and they said he hasn't shown up for work. So I actually drove out to his apartment, and it looked like it was empty. We eventually actually called the police. We thought maybe there was foul play. I don't know where this guy is. Can be disappearing teachers, can be no books, can be sometimes students cheat. So I noticed when I first got into this job, I had never done anything like this before, this big, this kind of an administrative job, that at the beginning of the week, a big problem was not so difficult to solve. But by the end of the week, even little problems were very, very troubling. And this would be even more true for a semester or for an academic year. At the beginning of the academic year, problem, you know, might come up and it's all, that's all, a big problem is no. But by the end of the academic year, even little things were bothering me. You know. So it's good to have zazen. It's good to be able to come in and sit down on the cushion and enter realm of unshakable calm, and perfect clarity. Really wonderful to have that release. If you do zazen in the evening here at the university or at your home, you probably have noticed that there's a kind of rhythm to your practice, you know. You sit on the cushion and watch your breath. You begin to work with your koan. Maybe your koan is breath perception, maybe it's mu. And if it's the end of the day, all the events of the day return sometimes in your mind, and they can seem very sticky, very gripping, very, you know, so if something bothered you during the day, you feel troubled again, or if something frightened you, you feel frightened, a little bit of fear, and you sort of rehearse these events. And, you know, beginners don't know how to be free of this clinging, you know, so they just keep rehearsing these events in their head. They keep going over them, and if you're a real beginner, you make the mistake of trying to figure things out or solve these problems, like, tomorrow I'll say this to him, you know. That's very familiar sort of beginner's pattern. But eventually, if you start to really practice, and you practice regularly, it may take a long time, but sooner or later your mind begins to let go of these daily details, these things that seem so pressing. And it's like a half an hour, I think an hour and a half of zazen is like a vacation in Florida, really. Because, you know, first half hour you're worried, rehearsing all the events, you know, maybe your body. A lot of the physical difficulty people have when they sit is actually caused by their emotional mental state, you know. So, you know, when you sit, your body may even be very stiff and tense, stiff all day maybe from events of the day. And mind is very tense, mind is very inflexible, gripping everything. But, you know, you do a half hour of zazen and then the bell rings, maybe you adjust your posture. And sometimes you're so tired from the events of the day that you fall asleep during the first sit. You know, you just finally, everything has worn you out so much you just are sort of dozing sitting up. Then the bell rings and you straighten your posture and you go back to the sit, and usually, especially if you've been doing this for a little while, you find something really remarkable can happen, you know. First of all, those problems which seem so pressing and so gripping, suddenly, you know, just don't seem, it's like, oh, who cares? You know, they seem suddenly very distant, very unimportant, or like somehow they let you go. What it really is you've let them go, you know. And they just drift away. And they become very like a distant echo, distant murmur. And sometimes when that happens, you know, thoughts are still flowing through your head, and they come and they go and they come and they go, but they're not so gripping anymore. You don't pay, they're just babble. It's just like babble, like birds singing in the trees, you know, it's not so important. And your mind becomes more free and loose. And often when that happens, you feel a kind of energy surge through your body. You know, many people experience a second sit as being more energized than the first sit. You know, suddenly it's like your body feels more alive again. You know, it's this really wonderful aspect of Zazen, you know, that really, no matter how rotten the day is, you can enter this state of imperturbable calm. And when that comes, there's real joy, you know, there can be real joy, real energy playing. It's beautiful, beautiful state. As you go on in your practice, you know, when I started doing Zen practice, my hope was that doing Zazen would give me magical powers. I really believed that. I had this idea that Zen masters and great Chan masters of China and Tibetan lamas had no problems because their karma was so good that everything just worked for them, you know. Or maybe I just thought they could manipulate their environment. I really did have a very idealistic view of Zen practitioners and Buddhist masters. But I began to, when I began to practice, I began to meet Buddhist teachers, and I began to notice that they had still had problems. You know, I had a chance to meet a very ill Roshi once who had stomach cancer. And he really impressed me because he seemed so happy. And he was going to die, you know. Somebody Web Sensei knew. Somebody Kangan Sensei knew. It was very interesting. I mean, being a deeply awakened person doesn't spare you from stomach cancer. Japanese people eat a kind of club fern. It's called club fern. And it's eaten everywhere in Japan, and it's tremendously carcinogenic. And they don't get it, you know. It's so traditionally, they go out and gather these ferns and they pickle them. And they are indeed delicious, but they are indeed, you know, cancer-causing. So if you eat them, even if you sit every moment of your life in the light of your fundamental nature, you will get stomach cancer. And indeed, this teacher had stomach cancer. But so happy. He seemed so happy, so free. It was really deeply impressive to me. That was maybe the first time I began to realize that there was more to this Zen than I thought. Life always serves up problems for us. You know, it's never going to be... My mother, I really love my mother. She actually does Zazen now. She's a Zen practitioner. But when she was younger, she was a very stressed person. I think she was always waiting for everything to calm down. And of course, she had had 3 children. My father was kind of a nut, you know. So things never calmed down in our house. It was always like chaos, either chaos at, say, 45 miles per hour or chaos at 100 miles per hour. And my mother would always say, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another. She used to say it very ruefully, like, when is this chaos going to stop? But the interesting thing is, you know, I think she's still waiting. Life is very chaotic. It's just the way it is. And troubles arise inevitably. You may not create them, but they arise, and they enter your sort of field of attention, and you have to deal with them. And really and truly, Zazen is like a wish-fulfilling gem, you know, really magical gem, real magic. Because no matter what the problem, you can use your Zazen to transform it into awakened mind. It's like, the truth is that these problems we have are really essential to waking up. And they're like food for our spirit. Really essential. Really essential. This is a little hard to understand, but we use these problems to deepen our contact with fundamental nature. And so they're a great blessing, really a great blessing. You know, there's another koan like this koan, about Zuigan. Sometimes he's in his small self, his personal self, and sometimes he's in his fundamental nature, his true self, his original, in Zen we say original self. See, there's a self that is born in 1953 and will die in such and such a year, and it has a name and it has a body. It's 6 feet tall or 5.5 feet tall. It weighs X number of pounds or kilos and so on. That's your personal self. That's a small self. Very wonderful gift to have a self, but your original self is a little different. Has no birth and no death. Unborn, never dies. Has existed forever and ever outside of time. So this koan is about a person who is in both selves, you know. He's Zuigan, born such and such a day, dies such and such a day. And he's got troubles. He's got things weighing him down. And he says to his essential self, his original self, Master! Master! He calls the Master. And of course, Zuigan has had Kensho. He's had enlightenment. So he has access, very direct access, to the Master. And he becomes, you know, he is the Master. He recognizes the Master and he says, Yes! See, he moves from Zuigan to the Master. Well, this is a wonderful, wonderful capacity to do this. We all have this capacity. There's another koan that's very much like this. There's a collection of koans called the Iron Flute. It was collected in Japan in the 18th century, but it goes kind of like this. It says, you know, why is this? When you go to the front of the temple, no one is there. But when you go to the back of the temple, you meet your old friends Li and Chang. See? Li and Chang are always waiting at the back of the temple, your old friends, but at the front of the temple, no one is there. This is pointing to the same thing, the same aspect of reality. Our life has two parts, really two parts. There's the front of the temple, which is essential self, formless, arupa, timeless, unborn, undying. And then at the back of the temple, there are your old friends, Li and Chang. And back of the temple is not bad. Front of the temple is not good, see. The back of the temple and front of the temple, to have a temple, you have both front and a back. And being fully realized human being is able to integrate the front of the temple and the back of the temple. You know, this is what Chan, this is what Zen practice is all about. A beautiful koan, another beautiful koan. Why is it, it says? You know, the front of the temple, no one is there. But when you go to the back, there's Li and Chang, your old friends. You know, ordinary people just want to live in the back of the temple, right? You know, they just want to play around with Li and Chang. And they get too caught up in the back of the temple life. You know, sometimes it's happy, and sometimes it's sad, but not really liberating. You really can't see the big picture. It's just a realm of form. And people usually get very closed up by just living in the realm of form. Kind of, after a while, your horizon, your perspective gets very narrow. You have to maybe suffer a little bit sometimes, or you feel the inadequacy of back of the temple life, And you begin to wonder, there must be something more here. There must be something else. And usually life is very kind to us. It usually gives us problems, and problems maybe eventually lead us to the cushion. Most people who come to Zen, I think, have noticed the instability of life or the precariousness of life, whether they've noticed it in maybe a positive way or a negative way. They see that these fleeting things, things we love, disappear, and then things we don't love sometimes cause us a lot of pain. And deep inside the human being, there can be this powerful desire for liberation and awakening that comes out of these experiences. And so we take a trip around the temple, and we enter through the front. Front of the temple is essential nature, essential self. Back of the temple is small self. Not bad. It's not bad to be a small self. Essential self takes on the form of small self. It's a wonderful game that we play. Another way to look at it is like this, and this is equally so. You know, from moment to moment, consciousness, awareness is, I've talked about this before, but awareness is not really continuous. You know, it seems to be continuous, but it's not. You know, when I was a kid, we used to, I lived on a military base, and we had a Saturday night movie. And it was usually, it was for sailors and soldiers and military people. So there were a lot of war pictures, like World War II pictures. There were all the James Bond movies and this. So, you know, everybody on base, since there was nothing else to do, would go on a Saturday night and go to the base movie theater and see the movie. And it was like 10 cents or something. And basically, it was a military installation from World War II, and they had an old projector, and a lot of the time the film would break, or every once in a while the projector would get off, and the timing of the projector would get off, and you'd be looking at the screen, and all of a sudden, instead of seeing continuous images, you'd see a flash. You'd see a flashing image and then a space. And then it would begin to flicker. The images on the screen would begin to flicker because the timing was off. And you'd see an image and then a space, a white space, an image and a white space, an image and a white space. You know, actually, movies are just a series of images, which are individual images. But the mind forgets the spaces. It has a habit of not looking at the spaces, but they're really there. Mind puts motion. It links up the individual pictures into a motion. But actually what we're seeing is individual frame pictures. Well, actually, that was what happened at the base movie theater, but it's also what happens in reality. You know, if you do a lot of Zazen, you begin to notice that moment by moment, there is something, and then there's a little space, and then there's another moment of awareness, and there's a little space. You can see this for yourself, and you will if you practice Zazen long enough, that between moments of awareness, there are these empty spaces, these blank spaces. See? So, you know, actually, it's even more complicated than this, because if you watch the moment of awareness, you know, it's like a wave. First there's nothing, and then there's something, and then it goes back into nothing again. And it's very interesting, you know, the moment has a structure. You know, moment comes into being, it's very fresh. You know, then mind holds on to it for a while and it clings. There's a sort of stages, or the Japanese say nen, stages of awareness. You hear something fresh, open mind, then it begins to fall, you begin to cling, and then it begins to fall apart. Usually there's a little anxiety at the end of the moment. It's very interesting. Most humans live in a mood of second and third parts of the moment. But at any rate, these moments are like waves. It comes into being and then it dissolves into nothing. And it comes into being from nothing and dissolves. I promise you that if you do enough zazen, you will see this for yourself. Normal people don't like to look at the spaces. They're a little bit scary. You know, sometimes when people start doing zazen, they begin to fall into those spaces automatically. They begin to find these blank spaces, especially when they work on the mu koan, the u koan. U koan really is just saying, don't look at the pictures, look at the spaces. Go deeply into the spaces. See? That's all u koan is about, saying, hey, stop looking at the picture, look at the spaces, go into the spaces. You know, sometimes people who are doing mu koan encounter those spaces and they get very happy. You know, it can be really liberating. Formless realm, the realm of no form, arupa, is the source of everything. And when we encounter it, it's just like when we sit. You know, that second sit where you begin to loosen up and you begin to hold on less tightly to your fears and your attachments, all the energy rushes into your body. It's really nice. Same thing when you begin to dwell in arupa realm. It's suddenly very liberating to stay in those spaces. Although, you know, people are afraid. We're tiny little creatures. You know, humans are really like very small creatures. And Buddha mind is vast ocean. It's a vast ocean. You know, and when we begin to do mu shin, mu meditation, u meditation, we're like a little tiny person on a beach, great ocean, and we stick our toe in, and it's like, whoa! You know, it's so vast we can't even see the whole ocean. You know, some people see the ocean and they jump in and say, this is fantastic. But most of us are a little frightened. It's hard to just swim freely in the ocean, even though it's where we belong. We belong in the ocean of shunyata, but we're afraid. So we cling to the shore. We stay on the shore, even though the shore is cluttered with junk sometimes and garbage and many problems. We look at the vast ocean, so serene and radiant, and we're terrified. It's an interesting, it's a joke, you know, really, because eventually we learn to be like whales in the sea, and we're so happy in this beautiful ocean. We think, whatever made us afraid of the ocean? So beautiful, our true home. But for a long time, in fact, you know, that's what Zen practice is all about, learning to love the ocean, where we belong. But for a long time, we're very nervous about entering those blank spaces. It seems dark and very cave-like, you know. But stay there long enough, and I promise you, everything will change. It takes a long time, but sometimes, but not that long. And when it changes, it's really unbelievably wonderful. You have to dwell in ushin, in shunyata. You have to go through the, in order to wake up, you have to go through the front door of the temple. You have to go through the front of the temple. If you go through the temple, you know, when you go to the front of the temple, nobody's there. It seems kind of scary. You know, the temple is this magnificent place, but it's very lonely, it seems, at the front of the temple. Nothing is there. Maybe it seems dark to you, maybe it seems forbidding, but if you go through the temple, it's wonderful, wonderful. You become younger with every step. And when you enter the temple and you go through the temple, you come out the back, and when you come out the back, actually what you find is your old friends, Lee and Chang. In other words, you know, for beginners in Zen practice, These two worlds seem very separate, very separate. You know, front of the temple and back of the temple seem very separate. Most people get into Zen because something's bugging them. At least that's how it was for me. Some people have a better nature than I had. There are people who are just very sensitive and intelligent, and they're attracted to Zen, and they didn't have any big fears or anxieties or problems. Those people have sort of a higher nature, I think. But I have a rather crude nature, I think, and so I was sort of driven into Zen by my fears. And I was very much afraid of the back of the temple, you know, very much afraid. I wanted to just get into the temple and stay there and not to deal with my problems. And actually that prevented me from making much progress in Zen. It's interesting. I was so afraid of this world that I couldn't really liberate myself. You know, the truth is that problems we have are like a great gift, great opportunity to wake up. You need those problems to wake up. There was a very famous Zen master named Jiyu Kennett. I've talked about her before. But she started a Shasta Abbey, the Shasta Zen Monastery in California near Mount Shasta. And it's very one of the most successful Zen temples in California. She went to Japan. She was an Anglican minister, Episcopalian minister, one of the first women to become an Episcopalian minister. But she wasn't really happy with the Episcopalian religion. She wanted to study Zen in Japan. She found a very wonderful teacher who wanted to have Westerners and also wanted to have many women in his Sangha. So he welcomed her, but all the other monks used to play tricks on her. They were all men, and the Japanese are quite sexist, as a matter of fact. And even though Buddhism is not sexist, originally was allowed women to become Nalanda University allowed women to take degrees, had women's dormitories and so on. This is in the year 800, this was the Sō. So very progressive, but in Japan women are somewhat second class, and in Zen temples, unfortunately, that sexism is often the case. So all the monks would give her bad information. They'd say, you have to sweep the yard with this broom, and it wouldn't be the right instrument, and somebody else would come by and yell at her. Or they'd say, we'll wake you up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but they wouldn't wake her up, so she'd miss the sutra recitation. And she was so discouraged, she went to see the Roshi, and she said, everybody's treating me so badly here. And the Roshi said, you must understand that all of these problems that happen to you are really opportunities for you to wake up. You can use these to liberate yourself. You must use these problems to liberate yourself. You can't make the problems stop, no matter how clever you are, no matter how resourceful or creative you are, they just keep coming. So you want to deal with them intelligently and resourcefully. But the path to liberation is to use them by entering Ushin. So use them to enter Ushin. When you sit on your cushion and you have a lot of problems, it takes a long time for the mind to become clear. But when it becomes clear, it's really clear. It's like sometimes the bigger the problem, the bigger the liberation. This is very important. This is why koans are so hard, see? If a koan could be easily answered, you might have a little tiny insight. But the koan creates a big problem for you. And the pressure builds, and it 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 builds. And it's like trying to push through a wall. It's like trying to push through a big wall that won't move. But you've got to get through the wall. This is Piquan. This is what Putitamo taught, Piquan. You face the wall and the pressure builds and it builds and it builds. And you've got to push through this wall. All these troubles are weighing on you, see. When you pass through that wall, you pass through that wall 100%. You go through all the way. And that's liberation. You know, and the heavier the load you're carrying, the greater the liberation. This is absolutely true. Absolutely true. See, this is why that monk was so happy. You know, stomach cancer is a terrible thing. Why was he so happy? Because this was like Dharma food for him. This is, I remember reading a Tibetan monk was a prisoner of the, government during the period of the Red Guards. And he was in prison and he was tortured. And it was really amazing to read this, that he said, you know, this was my practice. This was my practice. I kept using this to wake up. It seems impossible. Seems impossible to have that spirit. But that's exactly the right spirit. You know, our problems seem so big, but often they're small. You know, in the Diamond Sutra, Lord Shakyamuni in a previous life was cut into pieces by the Raja of Kalinga. And in the Diamond Sutra, it says that he never once allowed hatred to arise, even for a split second. His being, his mind was unshakably calm and filled with loving kindness, even as he was dismembered. And as a result of that, he was reborn as the Buddha. So that little story is really what all of us have to do in our practice. You know, we have problems, yes, everybody. And it's, you know, I mean, Keiko isn't here because she was in an auto accident. You know, people have continued to be alive is to be in this sea of this boiling sea. But you use those problems to go through the wall, and your release will be, you know, really magnificent. And then, you know, the other side of this is that you begin to have a very different attitude towards your problems. You know, begins a very different attitude towards your problems. Zuigan Osho called to himself every day, Master, and he answered, Yes, sir. So this is a small self calling original self. Then he would say, Be wide awake, and he would answer, Yes. See, this is like a little comedy almost. It's like saying to a fundamental Buddha mind, Be wide awake. It's all awake. It says, henceforth, don't be deceived by others. This is another way to translate this is, you know, don't let all the bullshit get to you. You know, maybe Zuigan has a lot of problems. But when he sits on the cushion and he straightens his back and he watches his breath and he enters Ushin deeply, the realm of no form, he passes deeply into the realm of no form until he encounters his fundamental nature. And when you return to the world in that condition, all of these problems have a very different character. You know, it's you look at them like a mother looks at her children. You know, all of this is your self revealing itself. But, you know, the path to liberation is this formless path. You know, when you sit on the cushion, you straighten your back and you watch your breath, you should find that eventually the problems of the day become less pressing. And you have this sense of release. It may take you a long time. You know, when I was in graduate school, I was a finalist for a job that was the perfect job, I thought. And I went out, and everybody said, "You're going to get this job." And then I didn't get the job, and it was really hurt. You know, it really was. I mean, it's a small problem, but at the time, I was facing unemployment, and I wondered what was going to happen to me. It really hurt. And I just sat, and I sat, and I had some of the most magnificent sits I've ever had, because when I started, my whole body seemed to hurt. My whole body seemed to be in pain, but after a while, entering Wuxin, this beautiful life energy flows through you. It's really, really amazing. And I think the sits were so magnificent because the pain was so great initially. But it's very important to resist when you're doing this, when you're practicing in this way. It's very important to realize that you aren't going to solve your problems. You can try to solve them in the world of form, but you're not going to free yourself from your problems unless you enter Wuxin, shunyata. So, you know, when you're sitting on your cushion, you're working on your koan, or you're trying to free yourself from events of the day, if you find yourself thinking, trying to solve these problems mentally, like telling a story or doing calculations in your head, that's not the path to liberation. Also, it's also not the path to liberation to seek visions or you know, if you see celestial beings, if you have ability, if you have ability to, you know, you might feel that you're floating around the room. You might encounter Guanyin or some other being. Actually, these are not liberating either. These are also just forms. So, you know, don't trust a discriminating mind to free you. It will solve some of your problems, but it won't liberate you. Also, don't trust visions. That is not a Buddha's path. The Buddha did not teach liberation through magic, through actually even ritual. Buddha taught liberation through the practice of Zazen and through the practice of Wuxin, formless realm. So we may see visions when we sit. We may try to solve our problems with our discriminating mind. But you want to keep going deeper and deeper until all form disappears. When you breathe out and you say, ooh, ooh, at the end of that, there's usually a blank space. And it's that blank space you want to hold your attention on. So normally we breathe out. It's a blank space. When you draw your breath back in, thoughts return with all the anxieties and pressures. And then you squeeze the air out again. And that blank space returns. The idea is to breathe naturally and regularly, but continuously to place your mind back in that blank space. If a form arises, move through it or beyond it. If an image, even if it's Guanyin, even if it's an image of the radiant Buddha, those are just forms, that's not enlightened mind. Continue deeper, deeper, deeper into Wuxin. And you keep, no matter what arises, see, you keep going into Wuxin. There's a koan you've all heard of. If you meet the Buddha, kill the Buddha. What does that mean? It certainly doesn't mean that we don't love the Buddha's path, but it means if you form an idea or an image, if you have a vision of Buddha, those are not the Buddha's path. The Buddha's path is to encounter original nature, original self, through the path of Ushin, of Shunyata. And in this way, we enter like super intelligence, super mind. There's a little mind which is ordinary consciousness, but this other mind is very big, this dark mind. It seems dark at first, and then it becomes open like the sky. This is a blue sky mind, beautiful mind of awakeness. So this is where Zuigan lives, in the blue sky mind. He's just playing a little game with himself. Yes, Zuigan has trouble. Maybe he goes to the doctor and the doctor says, Zuigan, you have stomach cancer. But he's an old monk. He's an old papaya. He's been doing Zazen for 50 years. And he just goes home and he sits on his cushion and he says, Master. And the Master comes. You know, the Master is your fundamental self, enlightened mind, blue sky mind. You know, people call human beings master. They say, so-and-so is a Zen master. But there really is no master except this Master. This is the Master, your own fundamental nature, which is also my fundamental nature. All of us are the Master. All of us serve this Master. There's no other Master. Wonderful Master. Master, yes, I'm here, always here. Then he would say, be wide awake. And the Master says, of course I'm wide awake. He says, you're not going to let all these problems grind you down, are you? He says, don't worry. Don't ever worry again. Don't ever worry again. Mumon's comment. Old Zuigan buys and sells himself. See, he goes to the front of the temple and the back of the temple. And the front of the temple and the back of the temple. He takes out a lot of God masks and devil's masks and he puts them on and he plays with them. What for, huh? That's beautiful. Beautiful life. Beautiful life. One calls and the other answers. One's wide awake, the other's saying he will never be deceived. If you stick to any of them, you will be a failure. See, both of these are aspects of reality. One is not holy, the other unholy. One is not clean, the other unclean. Both holy, both clean, both dirty, both unholy. Those are just words. See, all of this is life. All of this is life. Having problems is great. It's great. This being alive is great. It's great. What for, huh? One calls and the other answers. One's wide awake, the other says he'll never be deceived. Both of these are life. This is life. If you imitate Zuigan, you'll play the fox. Well, you can't imitate him. You have to be yourself. You have to find your own path into fundamental nature. But the point is, you know, most religious traditions, I think, are a little bit mistaken. Even some people who practice Buddhism, I think, are mistaken. You know, they think that this world is dirty and bad. The back of the temple is dirty and bad. And it's like filth. And you have to escape from all this filth. And eventually you'll be able to free yourself and enter the light. See, so it's like a lotus growing out of the filth into the light. It's a typical image. It's like this world is bad, heaven is good. But it's the other way around. This world is the flower of enlightened mind. It seems so hard to believe, but it's true. This world is the playground of enlightened mind. This life in time is the flower of the unborn. Is the flower of timeless being, timeless Buddha nature. So this is beautiful life, beautiful opportunity. This is what Buddhism is all about. this beautiful life. I'm so grateful. I am so grateful for this beautiful life. Clinging to the deluded way of consciousness, that's a discriminating mind, students of the Dharma do not realize the Dharma. The seed of birth and death through endless eons. The fool calls it the true original self. Remember that when Master Mumon says the fool, he's really paying somebody a compliment. So he's saying Suigan acts like a fool, but he's deeply awake. He understands that this world is the lotus. This world is the lotus. So today we have all come here to enjoy, celebrate this beautiful life together by returning to the source of this beautiful life. And that, I think, is the most beautiful life of all. So I thank everyone for coming, and I look forward to our next Saturday together.